If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 24 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orrico. You can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99. That's where I share out all of my new work, whether it be these podcasts, articles that I write, anything that goes out on Patreon. You can find all of that at JoeOrrico99. If you missed yesterday's shows, we did a couple of them, but the main one was the Disappointing Hitters Pod with Frank Stanfill from CBS, the host of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. We talked about 12 disappointing hitters to this point in the season and whether or not we think they'll be able to turn things around. So check that one out. It's in your feed. And also be on the lookout tomorrow because I'm going to be doing a live mailbag show over on YouTube on the Old Man Squad Sports Network YouTube channel. I'll put a link out on social media either tonight or tomorrow. And then we'll also release it as a traditional podcast. But if you want to get some questions answered, I am going to be doing that live 3 p.m. Eastern on the Old Man Squad Sports YouTube channel. So, and also, if you like to consume podcasts as video, I know there are some people who prefer the YouTube as opposed to the traditional audio feeds. All of my guest episodes are going up on YouTube. They're pretty much all up there already. The show from Frank is the show with Frank is up there. The show last week with Nick Pollock. The one from a couple weeks ago with Jeff Erickson. So if you do like to consume video versus audio, go check that out. I'd appreciate you guys hitting the subscribe button as well as we build up the YouTube over there. But we are going to be getting back to the swing of things where we talk about the big notes from yesterday's games, going over Tuesday's slate, and then we get into the most added and dropped players of the day. Let's start off with Drew Thorpe. I was fairly impressed. It was a solid enough debut. 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts, and 2 walks. He had a 29% CSW and an 11.2% swinging strike rate. He was a very, very popular ad, and he is currently, as of right now, sitting at 26% on Yahoo. I have some concerns going forward. We've talked about it a little bit on the show already, but wins are obviously going to be very, very hard to come by. It's probably best to just pretend that the win category doesn't exist when you have White Sox starters outside of Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty. And even with those guys, it's very, very tricky. The team is absolutely horrendous. I don't mean to pile on, but they have 17 wins through 68 games. Wins are going to be very hard to come by. So that's one thing. He was running a 25% strikeout rate at Double-A. He came up and he faced the team that strikes out more than any other team in baseball, only is able to give you 4 strikeouts over 5 innings. It was a solid enough swinging strike rate at 11%, but nothing that really is going to blow you away. It was his debut, and I don't want to be too hard on him because there's not that many people are going to come up, even against the team that strikes out a lot, and give you like 10 strikeouts. But I was hoping for, I think what I said on the show yesterday, the day before, was if he pitches 4 innings, I'm hoping for 5 strikeouts. If he pitches 5 innings, I'm hoping for 6 strikeouts. Just give you something there. 4 strikeouts in 5 innings. I don't want to read too much into just 1 or 2 strikeouts, but that part didn't really blow me away. It's also the fact that he's facing a team that is really struggling outside of just the strikeout factor. Seattle's offense hasn't been great, and it's also a very incredibly pitcher-friendly ballpark. So I wonder what we'll see from him in some suboptimal circumstances going forward as he gets his footing. And when he faces teams that are a little bit better than the Mariners in a park that's not as favorable to him. So I am a little bit concerned about what the fantasy value is going to look like over the course of this season. If we're talking long term, I think he can be very good. It's very hard to know what a guy is going to look like. But he does project to somebody who can be a very, very good pitcher. I just don't know that it's going to happen in year one, as the White Sox are so terrible as he's getting his footing. The strikeouts were excellent at the lower levels of the minor leagues. I want to see if he can kind of bring that to the big league level. Wasn't overly impressed with that part of it last night. He gets the D-backs this weekend. That's what he's scheduled for. Who knows if there's going to be any moving around as we approach the weekend. I'd be a little bit nervous about deploying him in that matchup. It's not like the D-backs have been so great. Offensively speaking, they're pretty solid. They're like probably about the 10th best offense in baseball, 10th or 12th range. And that is quite an improvement over Seattle. Seattle has been, despite the fact that they are top of their division, almost 10 games above 500, they're like the 25th, 26th best offense all told. So it's a tougher team. He doesn't have such a nice park to back him up for that next. I'm actually not 100% sure where that start is going to be. Let me just double check. But it's not going to be in that pitcher haven in Seattle. So that is a little bit of something to worry about. It's going to be in Arizona. It's not like a hitter-friendly ballpark, but it's certainly not Seattle. I'd be inclined to not start him there, and I honestly think that the only place where you really need to go about adding him is in deeper formats. If you're playing in a deep 12-team league, if it's a 15-teamer, AL only, those are the formats where I'd like to add him. You know, pitching is, I don't want to be repetitive, but pitching is just so good. To get a fringy guy who is not a massive strikeout arm, pitching for the White Sox, it's just a situation where you're probably not going to see a hell of a lot of fantasy value from him this season. I could be wrong there, but unless he lucks himself into a bunch of victories and gets that strikeout rate back up, I don't really see him being that valuable in those shallow formats. So I think that you're probably all right to just leave him on the waiver wire if you are in a standard 10 or a 12-teamer. Deeper leagues, sure, I don't mind placing a claim on him, but I would keep the expectations in check. I don't think this is going to be some breakout season for Drew Thorpe right now. Let's move on to Paul Skeens. Let's talk about what he did. Another excellent start. 6 1/3 shutout ball against St. Louis. 8 strikeouts. Did not walk a batter. Really good stuff. 31% CSW with a 13.6% swinging strike rate. 72% of his pitches were thrown for strikes. And now, Paul Skeens, through his 33 1/3, has 2.43 ERA, a 0.96 whip, and 46 strikeouts compared to just 6 walks over those 33 1/3. If you guys didn't realize this, I don't know if you guys listened to the Leading Off podcast of Fantasy Pros, but I'm the producer of that show, and I was just going through it this morning, producing the show, and Joe Pizzapia and Chris Welsh, a.k.a. The Welsh, were talking about where they think Paul Skeens is going to fall in starting pitcher rankings next year. I hadn't really thought that far ahead, but I'll kind of piggyback off of them and say that I think Paul Skeens is probably at this point trending towards being a top 10 starting pitcher in 2025. There will be, I've mentioned this a lot, I think that the Pirates are going to probably not take the kid gloves off this season. Once we get into next year, like let's say Paul Skeens is able to throw like 120 innings this season, maybe something like that. Next season, we're probably going to see an increase, and you'll have to project that when we're making our rankings in the season. So let's say all goes well, he throws 120, 130 innings or something this year that look really good. If he continues at this pace, I don't see how he can be anything outside of like a top 10 or a 12 pitcher. Again, very far away from making 2025 starting pitcher rankings. I'm actually working on an update that should be out later today or tomorrow on my Patreon for like a June update for starting pitcher rankings. But Paul Skeens, as of right now for this season, I wouldn't go that high just because I do have some innings concerns. But if we are looking ahead to next year, I don't think it's crazy at all to value him as about a top 10, top 12 starting pitcher. I think that's probably where he should be going. Let's move on to Jesus Luzardo. He bounced back with a great start against the Mets. 5 2/3, 4 hits allowed, 2 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. I'm maybe overstating it when I say great, but 32% CSW, 17.6% swinging strike rate is amazing. I think he's a great buy low target. I know that there's been a lot of talk about Jesus Luzardo and if he's maybe somebody that is not as good as we thought and he's gotten lucky the last couple of years. I'm inclined to believe that what we saw over the last couple of seasons is more the real Luzardo than what we've seen this year. He has a massive drop in his strikeout rate that isn't backed up at all by the swinging strike rate. Usually, the rule of thumb when you see swinging strike, if it's 10%, you say, okay, he's probably going to have about a 20% strikeout rate. If it's a 12% swinging strike, it's about 24. You're usually just roughly doubling it. It doesn't always work out that way, but generally speaking, it kind of does align pretty closely there. Luzardo has a slightly higher swinging strike rate than he did last season. Last season, it was 14.1. This season, it's 14.5. Last year, he had a 28.1% strikeout rate. That's what you'd expect. This year, it's down at 22%, even with the very high swinging strike rate. Little bit strange and something I would expect to correct itself over time, and you're going to see Luzardo get back to where the projections have him, 25, 26% strikeout rate, I think, at least. So that right there is something that should come back down to earth or come back up to earth, I guess, however you want to phrase it. But the 5.11 ERA is something I really don't think is legit here. I think a lot of it does come back to the very low strand rate at 62.5%, well below league average, well below where we've seen Luzardo for pretty much his whole career. He's 71.2% over his career. The last couple seasons, 71.7. Those are where you should expect it to be. If he's stranding about 10% more base runners than he currently is, that would be getting him back to average, and that would obviously help alleviate some of these run-allowed concerns. 5.11 ERA with a 3.91 xFIP with a 3.99 Sierra. I think he's really good, and he's just kind of been the victim of some bad luck. There's also a good chance that we see Luzardo traded over the next month. His name has been talked about quite a bit. The Marlins, you know, I talked about how miserable the White Sox are pretty regularly. The Marlins are not much better. 23-43. Not really much hope for this season. And I think once they traded Luis Arraez, what was it, 3 weeks into the year, people kind of got the idea that there's going to be a bit of a fire sale here. Tobias Funke-style fire sale happening in Miami. So I think that we can expect Jesus Luzardo to probably be dealt at some point. And, I mean, logic indicates that there's probably no chance he gets traded to a team that is worse than Miami. That would be pretty impressive if they find somebody worse. There really isn't anybody. He's not going to the White Sox. He's going to be traded to a good team, most likely. That would be what makes sense. A team that is competing is going to want to bolster their starting pitching rotation. And Luzardo is somebody who right now is probably a little bit discounted because of some of the struggles we've seen. And I think that it would make a lot of sense for a couple of different teams. We talked about it a little bit yesterday with Frank, that the Baltimore Orioles are probably a pretty natural match there for him. I thought the same thing about Dylan Cease last year with Baltimore, so this doesn't always work out the way you think it does. But Baltimore has tons of prospects that are probably not going to have any room to play at the big league level. The Norbys, they sent down Connor Norby today. You got Mayo, you got Kierstad, you got so many dudes, there's going to be no space for them. Plus, you figure there'll be a couple more that come up over the next year or two just based on how strong Baltimore's system has been and how strong their scouting and drafting has been. There's probably more of these guys coming in the works. There's no room for them. Where are you going to play them? You're going to have these guys, and we've seen it. Kierstad comes up, he plays once a week, sends him back down. Norby comes up, plays a couple times a week, they send him back down. There's no room for these guys. Unless you want to, I mean, they should just get rid of Urias and Mateo and maybe even Mullins at this point. Maybe not Mullins, but you could make the argument that they shouldn't be playing these guys while they have all this talent in the minor leagues. But these guys are not all going to come up and pan out and be all-stars. I think you kind of have to say, okay, we need to probably deal a few of these guys before either A, people really truly realize that we're in a bad spot and have nowhere to play them and have to trade them, or before they kind of maybe don't pan out, because prospects are not going to all pan out. Baltimore is probably riding very high right now. Their rebuild went about as well as it could possibly go. And maybe they're sitting there thinking, well, you know, Gunnar Henderson hit, Adley Rutschman hit. A lot of these guys are going to pan out. Maybe they hug the prospects a little bit, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to, especially when you've dealt with some pitching injuries and there are some good pitchers out on the market, specifically Luzardo. I think that trade makes a lot of sense. Bring a left-handed pitcher in where I think he would do very well in that ballpark. I think it makes perfect sense. And even if it's not Baltimore, I think there's a very good chance we see Jesus Luzardo dealt somewhere over the course of the next month and a half. The trade deadline, I haven't checked the exact date this year, end of July, beginning of August. Over the next month, I would expect Luzardo to be traded to a more favorable destination where he'll get some more run support, have more opportunities for wins, and as we see him settle into the season, he'll start regressing to that SP2, maybe SP3 that we've seen the last couple of years. So I don't really have any worry if you see him dropped anywhere. Probably not that likely, but only 85% on Yahoo. That's a pretty low number, 85, considering what he's capable of. A guy who had 200 strikeouts last year is available in some leagues. Even in shallow formats, I'd be picking him up, and I think that Luzardo is a really solid buy low right now. Let's talk about Cutter Crawford. He had a really nice start against a tough Phillies lineup. 6 innings of 2-run ball with 8 strikeouts and 1 walk. 36% CSW and a 14.7% swinging strike rate. He had a bit of a miserable run there where he got blown up, but bad start against Atlanta, bad start against Baltimore, bad start against Milwaukee. And it led to him going from about 85% down to 72% on Yahoo. I think that's a little extreme. I've never been a massive Cutter Crawford guy, but I think he is well worth a roster spot. There are certain instances where you're not going to really be that interested in starting him. Next week, for example, when he will face, or maybe it's this weekend, his next start against the Yankees. Yeah, I think it is on the weekend. You are probably going to be more inclined to sit him there, I think, in a roto standpoint. If you're talking head-to-head, it's the weekend, so it's really just situational if you're going to start him or not. He's not like somebody where it's a set and forget, but I do think a lot of the time you are going to be pretty confident starting Cutter Crawford, especially away from Fenway Park and even at home when there are some less than solid opponents coming in. Yankees is probably not the greatest place to start him, but he just showed yesterday that he can do well against what is arguably the best lineup in baseball. So there's no, like, he has to only beat down on the competition, punching down, if you will. But I do think you got to kind of pick your spots with him. He's not just somebody where I'm starting him 32 times. That being said, I don't think he should be available unless we're talking about some really shallow formats. Let's move on and talk about Yusei Kikuchi. Wasn't quite on his A game, but still had a really solid outing against the Brewers. The 4 walks kind of stands out as pretty ugly, but 5 shutout innings with 3 hits and 5 strikeouts, 35% CSW, and a 15.4% swinging strike rate. Command was shaky yesterday, no question, but he's been pretty excellent in that department so far. He's walking only about 5% of batters this season, so I wouldn't really read a lot into it. I think he's arguably been the Jays' best pitcher this year. We're looking at a 3.26 ERA, 1.23 whip, 76 strikeouts and 19 walks over his 77 and a third. He hasn't really gotten the love that he deserves, even in shallow leagues. 62% rostered. He was 63 yesterday when I put my notes together, so there were a few drops, not a lot, but we're looking at about 600 leagues that cut Yusei Kikuchi last night. I think he's a must-roster player if you're talking anything 12 teams and deeper, and even in those shallower formats, like I mentioned, if you have some deeper benches, a bit of expanded rosters, most leagues, Yusei Kikuchi is absolutely worth a roster spot and well beyond worth it, a very valuable player to have on your roster. If you're talking really shallow leagues, hard to squeeze anybody in there, and that's probably why we're seeing the number as low as it is, because those 8 and 10 teamers are probably not adding him up, but I think you can be justified. Certainly in a 12 teamer, he's a must roster player, and I think even in 10 teamers, you can make a pretty solid argument for Yusei Kikuchi as well.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's talk about David Hamilton. Kind of been excellent under the radar this season. I feel like a lot of people have no idea who the hell David Hamilton even is. He's a top 50 player over the last month and a top 25 player over the last week. He has a .289 batting average, 19 runs, 3 homers, 8 ribbies, and 13 stolen bases for the Red Sox. He's been kind of one of the better players over the last month, really. I know I say he's top 50, which sometimes you read too much, too little into those numbers, but he truly has been one of the best fantasy players here for the last little while. Second and shortstop eligibility. And I think the thing that kind of stands out more than anything else is for the last few weeks, Boston's had him bottom of the order, not really playing every day. Sometimes he'd get up as high as 6th, 7th, but nothing that was that appealing until yesterday when they put him in the number 2 slot in the order, and he goes 2-for-4. If Boston is going to keep David Hamilton at the top of the order, I thought that he had some value. I wrote him up about a week ago as somebody that's a worthwhile add for the short term, not sure about what the long-term prospects are, but in the interim, somebody to pick up. But if he is going to be batting second, with that speed, with the potential for batting average, dual eligibility, I think that there is a chance this could be a rest-of-season type of play. He's running a bit of a high BABIP. That'll come back down to earth. But I think he's still probably a 250, 260 hitter who can give you probably 30 stolen bases, and maybe he gets himself close to 10 home runs. If he's batting second in that lineup, you know he's not going to lack for runs either. So I think there's a lot to really like with David Hamilton. If you're seeing him out there, I think he is worthwhile, especially if you are in need of some speed. 28% on Yahoo, 21% increase over last week, though. He is among the most popular ads every single day. He'll be in the segment later. We'll skip over him because we're talking about him now, but he is among the most added players today, and he should be. He's been fantastic, and I think you should get him on your roster now while you have the chance to. Andrew Vaughn is a tricky one to evaluate. Over the last several seasons, I didn't really want to read too much into his struggles the first couple of years of his career because he was playing out of position. Jose Abreu was playing first, where that's really Andrew Vaughn's position, and he was trying to learn the outfield. And he actually still had some decent seasons, despite the fact that he was playing out of position. The first couple of years of his career were not that bad. It was a very, very tough start to the season for him. But he has picked things up, and Andrew Vaughn is top 100 player for the last month. 14 runs, 14 ribbies, 6 homers, and he's batting .260. If you shorten that to a 2-week stretch, 14 for his last 36 with 3 homers. I don't know that we need to get carried away here. Shallow leagues, first base is very, very deep. If you're in a 10 or a 12 team league where there's just one first base spot, if you're talking corner, middle, a bunch of utilities, deep benches, it's a different story, and you can't give standard advice. But if you're just talking standard leagues, Andrew Vaughn probably doesn't cut it. Anything that's deeper, I would say that you can kind of take a chance on him and see if he's maybe able to hit. Because we're talking about a guy, you got to remember, Andrew Vaughn was a number 3 overall pick, tons of pedigree, somebody that still projects as a fairly high batting average asset with some decent pop. So it's not like there's nothing to like. It's not like a Paul DeJong where he comes out of the blue. Maybe Paul DeJong's not the best example, but it works. Like, Paul DeJong just has like a great couple week stretch and nobody's really going to buy into it because it's Paul DeJong. But Andrew Vaughn does have some prospect pedigree, still just 26 years old. If he blossoms a little bit more this year, I wouldn't really be surprised by it. Like, last year, people weren't really that interested. There wasn't a lot of talk about him in the offseason or whatever, but 21 homers, 80 ribbies, and he batted .258. Seen a lot worse. That's pretty solid, especially considering what the White Sox were trotting out last year. It's gotten worse this season, so the runs and RBI are never going to be a strong suit. Maybe not never, but not for the time being. But good power. I think there's a good chance that you're getting like a .260 batting average. There is something to like here if you are playing in some slightly deeper leagues with Andrew Vaughn. Don't know if he's cutting it in your standard 10s and 12s, but once we start adding those corner and middle and utility spots, I think those are the formats, specifically roto-based, where you can kind of squeeze him onto your roster right now and just see if he's able to keep this up. Do I expect it? I don't know yet. I don't know that the runs and RBI are going to be enough to justify him as a long-term pickup. But while he's doing this, I think you pick him up and just see if he's maybe able to stick. Don't get the expectations up too high, of course. But as a speculative ad, I think Andrew Vaughn is a pretty decent option right now. Let's have the Joe Adell conversation. It's been kind of a horrible month for him. As soon as I wrote this up yesterday and I said, like, it was 0-for-2 in the game to that point, and I was like, this is just brutal. Joe Adell, might as well call him O'Adell, actually. But He had two hits as soon as I wrote that. That's always the way it works. Even still, 10 for 79 over the last month, if you're looking at the last 2 weeks, 4 for his last 34. The season-long batting average is down below 200. It's been horrendous. It's been horrendous for a while. The power speed is what has kind of kept him around and kept him in my interest, because even if he's batting 220, if he's able to give you 27 homers and 25 stolen bases or something, you'll take that. But I don't even know if we're going to get that at this point. We've seen the speed really stop. 2 steals over the last month. 4 homers over the last month is fine, but without anything else, in a shitty lineup, there's not really a lot to love there. He's also, throughout this whole run, pretty much been at the bottom of the order. 5, 6, 7, 8 range of the batting order. I don't understand it. The Angels lineups this year have been some of the stupidest I've ever seen in my time watching baseball. I don't understand how they come up with the batting order. I feel like Ron Washington is just like fully senile at this point. I don't know how he puts this together. But Joe Adele, even when he was hot, was at kind of the bottom of the order. Even if he picks things back up again, there's nothing to say that Joe Adele is going to be batting third or fourth. It's pretty ugly stuff. I think that you're pretty justified in cutting him outside of some deeper leagues where there's not a lot of replacement options. If it's a 5 outfielder league, Joe Adele's probably still somebody that's worth holding on to. But if you have somebody out there that's showing some signs of life on the waiver wire, I wouldn't be hugging Joe Adele just because there's potential. We've seen the inconsistencies over the last couple of years, and this is truly, truly one of the most inconsistent stretches I've seen. Not even inconsistent, consistently bad. Nearly batting under 100 for a month. It's pretty, pretty terrible. If the lineup context was better, I'd be a little more interested, but I do think Joe Adele is a pretty easy drop in those shallow formats. Keep him around in deeper leagues because there's not really much else to pick up, but I think you're pretty justified in cutting him now in most places. Let's talk about Christopher Morel. This is probably going to be a bit of an unpopular take, but I don't think that Christopher Morel is all that great of a fantasy asset, specifically for you in head-to-head leagues. There's times where he is amazing, and there's also times where he's a major liability. He's on a very nice run right now. He's a top 40 player for the last 2 weeks, but that batting average is really tough to swallow. .074 over the last month. He's batting .208 for the season. Personally, for me, and I understand if you want to hold on to him, I'd prefer to try and move him for a similarly valued asset that's not so shaky in terms of the ups and downs in a given month. This week he hits 6 homers. This week he doesn't have a single hit. It's very tricky to roster those kinds of players in head-to-head and try and time those hot streaks. You drive yourself absolutely crazy. You put him on the bench this week because he was poor last week, and then he hits a couple homers. So then he goes into the lineup, and then he has an 0 for 23 week with 1 run scored. It's very tricky to time it. I know I'm in the minority here probably because he is still fairly valuable. He's nearly a top 100 player for the season as a whole, but that Cubs lineup has not been great. I don't know how sustainable the runs and RBI total are when you're talking about Dansby Swanson not performing well, Seiya Suzuki always getting hurt, Cody Bellinger hasn't been up to scratch, Nico Horner's going to be playing with a fractured wrist or whatever he has. There's a lot not to like here. I get that there's multi-position eligibility. He's a pretty terrible defender whenever he plays the field. So I just think that we're talking about like a DH type here going forward who's very inconsistent with a very low batting average. I think it's probably wise to trade him and get something that's a little more stable. That's my own thought, and I understand if a lot of people aren't there because Morel has been good this year, but I'm really not a fan of the profile and the ups and downs that we get from him. Let's move into the most added and dropped players of the day. I thought it'd be close. I thought Cody Poteet had been the number one add, but it is actually David Hamilton has overtaken him here. 8,500 adds today. We talked about him earlier. I think he's a great pickup. Cody Poteet is all right as a pickup here. He's not somebody that I'd really want to be going for in those shallow formats. I think if you're talking slightly deeper leagues, it's fine, but the Royals have been really good offensively. I wasn't really buying what they were doing to begin the season, but it's hard not to at this point. I think they'll still come back to earth a little bit, but it's tricky to throw a guy like Poteet out there. Even though if you're just looking at the box score, 172 ERA, he doesn't strike really anybody out, 18% strikeout rate. The walks are fine at 6.6%. Historically, they've been a lot higher. I wonder if he can keep that up. And again, like, he's outperforming that ERA by a lot, the ERA estimators. He has a 4.16 Sierra. He has a 3.86 xFIP, a 5.47 expected ERA. He's allowed a 2.09 BABIP, and he's stranded over 90% of base runners. So I don't know that what he's doing is very sustainable at all. Not to mention the tough matchup. I think Cody Poteet is strictly a deeper league play today, if you want to go about it. And even then, not something that I'd really encourage. Jake Irvin is also among the most popular ads today. I've been a big fan of his this season. We've talked about him a lot. What he's done is excellent, and I think it's fairly sustainable. I don't know that we're going to get a lot of wins pitching in Washington, and I know that there's not a hell of a lot of strikeouts with Jake Irvin, but he has a 3.12 ERA, 3.55 on the xFIP. He has a 3.67 Sierra, and he's keeping that walk rate down enough where you're looking at nearly a 17% strikeout minus walk. He gets the Tigers, and I think that he is among the best streams tonight, one of my favorites. I think my favorite stream of the night, though, might be David Peterson. He gets Miami. This is pretty sweet stuff. Miami stinks. Peterson has been pretty solid since he's come back. I like this one a lot. I really do. And I've been a David Peterson fan for a while, so I'm probably a little bit biased towards him. But when you're getting a guy who is coming off a couple of really solid starts, one of them against the Dodgers, one of them against the Nationals, and then you're rolling in to face Miami, who is truly inept offensively, I think Peterson really makes a lot of sense as a pickup. Connor Wong is kind of surprisingly just been added in a lot of leagues. I guess it's the JT Realmuto replacement. That's probably what it is, with JT Realmuto going to be missing about a month. He's going to have a knee procedure. Wong is being added in as a replacement. I've been a fan of his going back to the preseason. I like what he's doing. I don't think he's going to bat 330, but I think he can give you solid batting average with some speed behind the dish, which is kind of a big thing. Three stolen bases all coming over the last month. Maybe we get a double-digit steal season, and maybe he's able to keep the batting average up over 300, considering how strong he started off. I like Connor Wong. I think that that's a very, very reasonable replacement for JT Realmuto. We're also seeing some Tyler Stevenson ads. I think he's fine. I've been a big Tyler Stevenson guy for the last couple of seasons. He's been pretty good as of late, outside of the last week where he struggled a little bit. He'd be a fine option. I think I would go with Connor Wong, though. He'd be my preferred choice there, choosing between the two. And yet again, we have a bunch of Ryan O'Hearn ads. We've talked about him a lot. I love him as an ad in Daily Change Leagues. He's up to 47%, 22% jump over the last week for Ryan O'Hearn. The number one drop of the day, I'm disappointed, but it is Tyler McGill. I think it's a little extreme, considering he was pretty damn good yesterday. And overall, for his 25 and two-thirds innings, we've seen 32 strikeouts, 3.16 ERA, 1.25 whip. Good stuff from Tyler McGill. You're not expecting ace-level stuff, but you're getting a very good pitcher, well above replacement level so far. His next start is against the Padres at home. It's a little bit tricky over the weekend. Head-to-head, of course, it's a situational thing on those weekend matchups. In a roto standpoint, I think I would be willing to start Tyler McGill. I wrote him up yesterday. There's a pretty long write-up on my Patreon about him. I think that he is becoming the best version of himself, and I went into some detail there if you want to check it out. There's a link in the description of the episode for the Patreon. But I really like Tyler McGill. I think that he is an excellent pitcher. I think that there are shades of Jacob deGrom in there, even though he's never going to be Jacob deGrom. Don't mistake what I'm saying there. I hope nobody clips that. But I think that he is an excellent, excellent pitcher. And I don't think that it's fair to cut him after what was a pretty solid start yesterday against Miami. I know it kind of fell apart in the last inning. Still got 8 strikeouts. We've still seen some really good stuff from him. So I think it's a bit premature to be cutting him. Ben Brown is among the most popular cuts of the day as well. He was placed on the injured list last night with a left neck strain. In those shallow leagues, I get it. If you have an IL spot, then I would hold on to Ben Brown. It's not an arm injury, so it's not something where you need to worry so much about a ramp up when he comes back. They said he's been dealing with this over the last few weeks, and they're going to undergo some more testing. If it comes back serious, then sure, like, cut him. I don't have a problem there. If you have IL spots, I would be holding on, but I do understand that IL space is very precious. 10 and 12 team leagues, there's probably not a lot of room for Ben Brown. So I would be okay with it, but I would try and hold on. He's been really, really good this season in his rookie year. 64 strikeouts in 55 and a third, 3.58 ERA, 1.08 whip. It's been some good stuff from him. I wouldn't want to let him go, but I would understand it at the same time. Mitchell Parker is one of the most popular drops today. It might end up being that he is the most popular drop by the time it's all said and done. He had a pretty poor outing yesterday against the Tigers, 4 2/3. The thing is, he didn't allow any earned runs. So if you're looking at just the stat line, it's okay, 0 earned runs, 1.5 whip. There was 4 unearned runs, and it came on a Mitchell Parker error. So it was his own doing that caused the chaos, but it didn't hurt us or him from an ERA standpoint, which we'll definitely take. He was due for a stinker. He's had nothing but good outings pretty much throughout the first 2 months of his career, going back to that start in mid-April against the Dodgers. There hasn't really been anything that's been poor. It's been mostly really, really good stuff. And I just think it's a little bit premature to be cutting bait on him right now. Another player that I wrote up yesterday, and a thing that keeps me holding on here, even in those shallow leagues, because I get it. If you're in a 10-team league, you kind of take what you can get. First sign of trouble, you move on. And this was a bit of a sign of trouble. Like, he had like 2 whiffs. It was not a great outing. But he does get the Marlins at home in his next outing. So that should be enough to keep you holding on to Mitchell Parker. I think there's a lot there just based on the matchup. And I think it's a pretty solid streaming opportunity. Even if he's not a must-roster player, I think he's close considering what he's done. You are looking at a 3.21 ERA and a 1.09 whip. Very good stuff. Nothing that says he's really vastly overperforming the advanced metrics. You're going to lack in strikeouts and wins like a few guys we've talked about today, but I think Mitchell Parker is really solid, and it's a little premature to be cutting him right now. Matt Vierling, also among the popular cuts. Totally get it. I don't think there's much here. When he was really hot and he went on that little bender against the Blue Jays where he had like 4 home, or Blue Jays and Pirates, I think it was, and he hit like 4 home runs over 2 games or 3 games. He was added up in a lot of leagues and people got very excited, but I don't think there's a lot here. I think that he's a fine player in deeper leagues, but if you're talking standard size formats, 10 and 12 team leagues with 3 outfielders, I don't think there's a lot of room for Matt Vierling on your roster. I think that's a spot where you'd be better off streaming it than holding on to him. Jordan Hicks was pulled early yesterday, battling an illness, they said. 4 2/3. Actually, was he pulled? Yeah, they lifted him early, I guess. I'm not sure if it was because of the illness or just because he wasn't doing terribly well. Actually, I'm not 100% sure there. 4 2/3. Velocity was down a little bit. He wasn't great. This is not a situation where he should be on the most popular cuts, though. Like, he's still been very good this season. 3.01 ERA, 1.20 whip. I wasn't a big fan of him coming into the season. I think that those guys who convert from relievers to starters are always a little tricky to figure out, although they've done pretty well this season. Well, that being said, he's not a cut yet. Like, he's done very well. Keep him around, see if this is anything serious. I don't think it is. Even if it is something serious, I mean, they say it's an illness. Maybe he has, like, COVID or something, or he's out for a week or two. But even if he does, or even if he is out for a week or two, I don't think that's a reason to cut Jordan Hicks. I think you still hold on. Maybe you kind of see what the trade market is, but I don't think it's a great time to be trading him after a couple of subpar outings in a row with the illness. I think you just hold on here, hope for things to turn around, and then once they inevitably do turn around, I think that's a decent opportunity for you to just kick the tires and see, because like I said, I don't know about what we're going to see down the stretch from a reliever converting to starter in terms of how they're going to limit his innings. We'll eventually have Alex Cobb and Robbie Ray coming back, which are going to kind of muddy the waters in the rotation. So maybe he's somebody where they use some abbreviated outings or what have you. But I still think it's really a premature move to be cutting him. He has been one of the best starting pitchers in fantasy this season, specifically at cost. And I don't want to be cutting him here. In any case, like, I'm trying to think of a way, like, well, you could cut him in this situation. There's nothing really as of right now that would make me say Jordan Hicks should be cut, unless we're talking about maybe an 8-team league. We are going to wrap there for the day, guys. I appreciate all of you coming in, listening to the pod. If you haven't done so already, I'd really appreciate you guys subscribing to the show and hitting us with some kind words in the review section. It really does help the algorithm do its thing, get the pod out there and be seen by more people. We are going to do our usual show tomorrow. We're talking news and notes from Wednesday and the most added and dropped players. And then in the afternoon, I mentioned it at the top, 3 p.m. Eastern, there's going to be a live YouTube mailbag show with my buddy JP from Fantasy Six Pack on Twitter at Dap Scout. He is also a member of the Old Man Squad Network, as Fantasy Six Pack has joined the fold over the last couple of weeks. So we're going to be there for 45 minutes to an hour answering your questions. Put it in the calendar. Make sure you're coming and checking it all out. But until then, everybody, take care. Have a great night.
Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.